helping kids deal with loss. Loss is part of life. You have things, they go. They break, they leave, they end. That's, you know, just part of the experience of every human being. And it's painful. If something you love breaks, you know, not there for you anymore, that's disappointing. And, you know, parents don't like to see their kids disappointed, so whenever they can, they might rush in with, oh, don't worry, I'll get you another one, you know, and provide a solution. And there's nothing wrong with solutions. That's great. But there's a whole lot that's going on in a child before the solution happens that parents need to attend to as well. A minor loss, like losing one's favorite pencil case or something, still is a loss that can provide education for the child. And then losses get a lot larger than that. For example, if a child has some pets, you know, like goldfish and turtles and so on, well, goldfish die, and that's a different kind of loss. You know, the little fishy isn't there anymore. And for a child, that could be very upsetting. Or if an animal, a pet with even more personality passes away, like a duck or a bird or a cat or a dog, the child can go into serious grief because that's almost like a person passing away. Sometimes a child has a friend who he really is attached to, and that little buddy moves away. Parents divorce. That's a really common loss that today's children are experiencing, the loss of the constant life with both parents in their home together. Sometimes somebody in the extended family or in the world around the child passes away. That is a person that the child knows, whether that's a classmate or a neighbor on the street or a great uncle or something. The child is familiar with the person, and the concept of here today, gone tomorrow can be alarming and generate all sorts of feelings. But of course, the worst kind of loss for a child is, or for any of us, is really the loss of a loved one due to death. So that person is not going to be coming back. And that could be in a child's life. It could be a sibling. It could be a grandparent or another member of the extended family, or it can be a parent. So loss is something that many children will experience deeply, and all children will experience at least superficially. Back to the pencil case scenario, which is now looking good, right? But we want to help children deal with it, because failure to deal with loss can have severe negative consequences for a child. For example, loss that is not properly processed, and I'm talking here about the more severe levels of loss, can leave a child with deep-seated subconscious and even conscious fears of abandonment. And the consequence of that can be a failure to make appropriate, significant attachments. So there are some people who just can't get deeply involved. They can't have a relationship. If they get married, the amount of giving will be very superficial because they have all kinds of protective walls around themselves. And very often, they will marry quite late or not at all because of an inner terror of losing love. And this may be something that is unavailable to them at the conscious level, so they don't know why it's so difficult. But it is difficult for them. Sometimes people who haven't dealt with a significant loss will have all kinds of rage inside because they're so hurt and angry, but it's never been allowed to be expressed. So where's it go? I mean, it's just sitting there. And things that happen that maybe other people might consider to be mild or moderate or insignificant even can trigger rage attacks from people who have unprocessed loss. And sometimes there's something called post-traumatic stress disorder, which is a full-blown trauma system. Full-blown trauma disorder is what I mean to say. And that happens when there has been a frightening, alarming situation of loss that has been poorly processed or not processed at all, so that the person has not just the grief and the anger, but they may not even be able to know where that grief and anger are coming from, but they not only have that, but they also may have terror in their system. So anxiety that causes them to become insomniac, like not be able to settle into sleep or to have all sorts of nightmares or to wake up very early. They may be hypervigilant with a hyper alertness to signs of danger, such as loud noises or slightly dark places or odd happenings that other people might not really notice at all. A person with post-traumatic stress disorder can have panic attacks and really not know where this is all coming from. And those are just, you know, some of the kinds of fallout from unprocessed loss, and we haven't even mentioned chronic low mood, depression, feelings of emptiness. So we wouldn't want a person to grow up and carry all that around when it's not at all necessary, because although loss is painful, it does not have to leave a permanent scar in the person's psyche if it is taken care of as close to the time as possible. And even if you miss that time, whenever you do take care of it, the psyche will heal. So the point is just not to cause any unnecessary suffering to our child by not addressing the loss. So at the time of a serious loss, children are having feelings, but they don't look like us adults. Like often a child with feelings you can't tell by looking at him that he's in deep grief. Because particularly if he's a young child, 5 years old and under, he just may look like a happy-go-lucky kid, maybe a little bit wide-eyed, but other than that, he may be going about his business. And if he's 10 years old and under, you know, he may be a little bit more spaced out, because loss causes children to be confused and lost and disoriented and to some extent overwhelmed. But what you're seeing when you look at a child that is going through that is some kid who can't concentrate so well. He seems to be daydreaming a lot. He's kind of spacey and goes in and out of the present moment, so he's kind of playing and then he's, you know, gazing away and things like that. But you can't really tell that he's terribly bothered. In fact, you may have heard people say, you ask them, well, how are the kids handling the divorce? Or how are they handling the death? And some parents will say, oh, they're fine. They're just going about their business. They're really doing well, you know. And honestly, that's ridiculous. Because, you know, how could anybody be doing well after a extremely significant loss? That isn't normal, okay, for a person of any age. The reason children look like they're doing well is because they do something called dissociating. They sort of slice that part of themselves off that is in pain, and that's a protective mechanism that's sort of built into the psyche of children so that they will be able to continue living and develop and move forward. And the pain is what gets sent to another part of the brain, sort of stored, and that's what comes out later, the way we just talked about it, in post-traumatic stress symptoms, or in misdirected rage, or unexplained anxiety or depression, or confusing inability to develop intimate bonds. Okay, so the feeling is still there, it's just kind of compartmentalized off somewhere. And we want to help a child connect to his or her grief, and not just let him go about dissociating. Now, it's not so pleasant for parents to confront the actual feelings of a child who is sad, because we parents want kids to be happy all the time. Just, you know, that's the only thing we want for kids. They should be happy. So even when there is a devastating loss, we don't want the kids to feel it. You know, we want them just to carry on, go to school, be children, be carefree, you know. So a lot of us don't help children connect to their loss. And that's part of why the children's loss just gets dissociated that way. But the normal feelings that children have would be like the feelings that we grown-ups have. In other words, they'd be pretty upset. If somebody they loved died, they would be very, very upset about it, very distressed. They would be sad. Okay? It's not a happy occasion. It is a sad occasion when somebody moves on. And even if it's just a dear friend who's moved away, the child will be sad. And if it's a parent who has left the house because of separation and divorce, the child is going to be sad. And if it's somebody who's died, well, then naturally this child is going to be sad. And often a child is frightened, scared. You know, what's happening? Why are people leaving the world? I mean, that's terrifying. If a little 8-year-old has a young neighbor on the street, a child who dies suddenly, the 8-year-old is very confused and frightened. Could that happen to me or to somebody in this household? What's going on here? And accompanying loss is often rage. Okay? There's anger. Why isn't that person here? Why did the person have to move away? Why did they have to die? And in fact, we see in kids sometimes, you know, their mom, let's say, has passed away, and the kid is just, you know, looking normal for a few years and then goes into adolescence and all of a sudden becomes a rageaholic. And if you get them to sit still and try and access their feelings, what they often come up with is absolute rage that their mom abandoned them. And that's a pretty hard feeling for people to deal with, because we go, well, you know, the person didn't want to die. The person didn't want to leave. It wasn't an intentional abandonment, which makes it very hard for us to connect to the feeling of anger at how dare you leave me when I need you. But that is a very real feeling that especially children have when a parent leaves them. And certainly, you know, spouses have when they are abandoned by their partner. They have that. How dare you leave me, you know? Rage is part of the experience of loss. And of course, the abandonment itself, that feeling of people have left me, people are leaving me alone when I don't want them to, my loved ones are departing in some way, that horrible, horrible feeling of abandonment. So those are some of the normal feelings that children feel and adults feel when they have experienced a significant loss, a human loss. Confusion, disorientation, overwhelm, distress, grief, fear, anger, abandonment. Now, what are parents going to be able to do to help their children deal with all of those strong emotions? Well, surprisingly, it's not even hard, really. It's just a matter of knowing that you need to deal with it. So the main point we'd say here is, do not ignore the subject of loss. Do not ignore the child's loss. And don't mention it lightly, glossing over it as if, oh, well, you know, it'll be fine. You know, well, dad's gone now, but, you know, we'll carry on and we'll be just fine without him. Okay, that may be true, and hopefully it will be true. But when a person is in grief, it's a very inappropriate time to tell them how everything will be okay. That's why, you know, if you're making a shiva call, you're visiting somebody who's in mourning, you don't, you know, come in and say, well, cheer up, you know, it'll be fine soon. I mean, that person was gone, but, you know, you'll meet another one. And, you know, that would be extremely inappropriate during that time. We have to help people process their grief, which means pay attention to the feelings that we just talked about. Let them express their feelings, talk about those feelings, or find those feelings inside of themselves. And by the way, all those feelings are not necessarily apparent to a child or adult all at once, because it's hard for us to contact our own feelings when we're grieving. There's a process of denial that accompanies some types of loss. For example, in children whose parents are separating or have actually divorced already, children will often just, you know, carry on with their fantasy, their deepest wish, that this is a nightmare that will soon be over, and their parents will get back together, and the family will reunite and live happily ever after as planned. So denial is one of the stages of mourning, of grieving, of trying to come to terms with severe loss. The first step is renouncing it. You know, I don't want that loss in my life, so it just isn't there. And then we can deal, you know, go through that for a while, and then there may be the anger, and then there may be the sadness. It may come and go in different layers, and we revisit feelings and so on. So when you are helping your child deal with loss, it's not clear what feelings the child may be experiencing at a given moment. You're simply giving the child permission to have feelings. And we do that by talking about the loss. So, for example, let's say a couple has divorced. And in some cases of divorce, there's not like this little happy two-family household kind of thing where the kids spend half the week with mom and then half the week with dad. Sometimes somebody disappears completely off the scene. So let's take one of those kinds of scenes where we'll make it, in this case, the father abandons the family completely, you know, moves to another country, and does so from the child's point of view very suddenly. You know, maybe the mother saw this coming for a long time, but the parents were living together in the house, and one day the parents come and tell the children that there will be a divorce, and that's news to the child. And shortly after the father leaves the house, he decides to move to another country, let's say with his new girlfriend. You know, these things happen, unfortunately. So this is the experience of some children. And the father's now gone, okay? It could be the mother, and it could be a million other scenarios, but let's just pick one that does happen to some people. Now, the father, who might have been beloved by the child, is gone, and what should the mother do at this point? Shall we just try and protect the child by not saying too much about it? Because after all, the child is going to school, looks just fine, why start trouble, right? But this is where it's important to know that giving the child an opportunity to process what's going on is essential. So the parent can mention what's happened in the following type of way. For example, let's say it's a quiet time after dinner or something on a weekend. The mother and child are together, or children, but I'll just make it, for simplicity's sake, a child in this case. And the mother says something like, you know, it's really, I find it really strange to be here together without daddy. Do you? Or, you know, do you ever feel funny that way? So it's the parent who leads the conversation, and the parent who first mentions a tentative type of feeling, in this case, strange, feeling odd, or feeling uncomfortable, or I'm not used to it, right? Just a gentle kind of introduction to the confusion part of loss. So the mom might start off with, you know, it feels so odd, so strange being here on the weekends without daddy. And the child of a certain age might say to the parent, I don't want to talk about it, you know, and that's because the child may be trying so hard to protect herself from overwhelming pain. And the parent can use the technique that we've looked at earlier called emotional coaching, where the parent names the feeling the child seems to be having. So the parent might say in this case, yeah, right, it's hard to talk about. It's not a very pleasant subject. I don't blame you. I don't like talking about this either. It's hard. You know, and so the parent has actually named a lot of feelings for the child, and that's very healing by itself, because the child sees that the parent is really understanding her inner world. And even if the inner world is, I don't want to talk about it right now. Now, if the child refuses to enter conversation about this issue on the next subsequent 10 occasions, let's say, I think the best thing for the parent to do here is consult a professional and see if the professional can help the child deal with some of the aspects of loss. So we're not saying that parents have to have all the skills of a professional, but in most cases, when the parent opens up discussion, most children will actually participate in some way, and the parent can continue to name feelings like, yeah, it's not only strange, but I don't like it, it feels empty, it's different, I feel lonely sometimes, do you, you know, and so that often will get a conversation going with a lot of kids. And if it really doesn't, like I said, after many repeated attempts, then it would be important to take that child to a professional counselor to help, you know, do some grief counseling of some kind. Even if your conversation is going well with a child, taking a child for professional support can often be extremely helpful. The main idea with emotional coaching is not to cheer the child up, to make light of a very heavy-duty situation, but to just sit quietly with feelings that hurt, so that so the child sees, yeah, we can talk about it, we can sit with it, and then we can get up and have dinner and be fine. We don't have to be miserable about it forever, but it's not a taboo subject. Because if you can't talk about it, it gives the child the message that it is so terrible that it cannot be put into words, that this loss cannot be tolerated, period. So when you do talk about it, it just says, well, this is part of life. This is part of life that isn't very great, is it? But it is part of life, and we'll just deal with it. So, you know, facing it head on. And a lot of times children will ask questions, you know, why? Why did they have to die? Why did they have to leave? Why? And there'll be questions that parents don't have answers to, which is another reason that parents don't like to talk about loss. But not having an answer is the answer, because we humans don't know the mysteries of the universe and why things happen. We're not supposed to know. So an okay answer is, I don't know. I don't know. You know, if you're a person of faith and you believe that God does everything for the good, so then you can say, I know that there must be some good in it that we can't feel right now. All we can feel right now is the bad part of it, that it hurts and that we don't like it. But we know that God is good and does everything for good, and maybe we're going to find out later what the good is in this situation. So a person could say that kind of thing to a child. And again, fine to acknowledge, I don't know God's ways. I could not possibly explain why this has to happen this way. But, you know, just having that conversation is comforting to a child, because even though you don't have an answer, the child knows there's no real answer anyways, not looking for that. Now, to help a child hold on to the value of a person, and this is another message you might want to give a child, that even though somebody has left the child's life, they needn't be afraid of that so as not to ever make relationships again. You know, because you can give a lesson that says something like, some people come into our lives for a short time. It could be 6 weeks or 6 months or 6 years. Or some people stay a long time, like 60 years or 90 years. And they'll be there for the whole journey with us. It varies. But each person brings something special into our life. And people come and people go, and there will always be different people that will be adding and enriching our lives. So the only constant, again, for those of who believe in the spiritual, the only constant is God. God is always with us at all the time on our journey. But people come and go, and it's good because we always learn something new from each person, and we have different kinds of love and different kinds of connection with each person. And a message like that may help a child not freeze up inside saying, I will never love again, you know, just giving the child the idea that love comes and it goes in all shapes and sizes. It's going to be flexible in our lives. Helping the child to benefit from the contact they had with whoever was in their life can be accomplished by creating a memory book. So working with the child on collecting photos, stories, life lessons and messages, and putting it all in a book with the name of the person who's no longer there. And this can even be one's hated husband or hated wife, whatever it is, ex, you know, the person who has left, because from the child's point of view, this person is not hated. This person is part of the child's psyche. So even in the cases of unpleasant divorces and painful breakups and so on, the child has a right to his or her fond memories. And to have that person incorporated into themselves in a positive way. And certainly, of course, in death, instead of just, you know, people are afraid that they're going to forget somebody and the importance they had. And creating memory books can help keep the memory not only in a book, but also the act of creating the book keeps the memory alive in the child's mind and heart. Doing acts of kindness, giving charity and so on, in the memory of a departed person can also be very therapeutic. And just help keep that person alive in a certain way in this world. As far as the parents' own grief, sometimes if we're talking about divorce or death, the model that the parent gives of coping with such a situation is really important to the adjustment of the child. So the ability for the parent to cry and then be fine, because grief is on, off, on, off, on, off, until it slowly fades out of the system. So instead of looking like a rock with no feelings, the parent can look sad in front of the child, and the child will say, Mommy, are you crying? And the mother can say, yes, I was just thinking of Daddy or Grandma or Grandpa, whatever. and I was feeling a little bit sad. But you know what? I'm in the mood now for some popcorn and a good movie. How about you? You know, and so up and down, in and out, and the permission to grieve in the natural way that we human beings do, which is we cry and then we feel better. And then we cry and then we feel better. And we want the child to see both parts of that. It's important, especially for the child, to see an adult handling grief without cracking up, without falling apart, without needing hospitalization. You know, it's if you can show your child that I am sad, I talk to people about it or to a professional about it. I take steps to comfort myself and to take care of myself and to cheer myself up. And then I move forward in my life. I make more relationships, more friends, more significant bonds. I work towards my future, and I don't hold on desperately to the past, right? I don't just look back and what if and if only and it's all over now, you know, like, 'cause that kind of thing can really scare a child. You want a child to see that no matter what has been taken out of a life, there is still life worth living and still important to go forward with joy and optimism and courage. So those are some of the ways that we can help children deal with this hard part of life. But being there for your child is the greatest gift that you can give them during times like that.